If a person were overdosing on opioids on the street in front of you, and there were a lockbox close by with naloxone inside, the medication that can revive people who have overdosed, would you use it? Well, that's the question researchers in Cambridge tried to answer when they put a dummy in Central Square and asked people passing by to pretend that they had just found an unconscious person. Well, joining me now is the person who oversaw this experiment, Dr. Scott Goldberg. Dr. Goldberg, welcome to Radio Boston.
Really a pleasure to be here.
So tell me a little bit about how the experiment itself worked.
So what we wanted to do was figure out a way that we could get naloxone into the public space in a safe and effective manner.
Right.
So we developed a process by which we could take naloxone, put it in a lockbox, and connect it to EMS. So someone who could call, they could call 911, just like they normally would when they encountered an unconscious person. And if the 911 dispatcher thought that there might be an overdose, they could direct that person to the lockbox and help them administer the naloxone.
And so when you did the experiment with the dummy, mm-hmm. did you just sort of randomly choose people on the street and say, hey,
yeah.
would you do this?
Exactly right, yeah. So this was really, really surprising to us. We talked to people before they ever engaged in the experiment. Just, what do you think about this? Is this a good idea? Would you do it? And there was a lot of hesitancy. People said, you know, there's no way I can do this. I don't have any medical training. Sure, I'll call 911, but giving a medication, that's way beyond something that I can do. Afterwards, people were all for it, amazed at how simple and easy it was. So people absolutely, at least the people that we talked to, seemed very much engaged and willing to do this.
So I have so many questions about this. I mean, one is, of course, we're in the midst of an opioid epidemic, and I think it's something like 5 people in Massachusetts every day die of opioid overdoses. So there's no question that we need innovative and effective solutions to save lives. But even given that, I wonder, I mean, in the terms of this experiment, it's an experiment. It was with a dummy. I mean, the actual risks are zero because it was a dummy. Because I just imagine, like, the stakes are so much higher if you actually see a real-life person unconscious before you. Do you think there would still be that willingness to jump in and help?
Honestly, I just don't know, and I think that that's the next step. Whether this will work in real life, I don't know. But to your point about the stakes being high, if we actually do this in the real world, you're still going to get the same response you would otherwise. So if a layperson did nothing, you'd get the same response. 911 is still going to be called. EMS is still going to respond. So there's really nothing to lose.
Mm. Well, because I wonder, because it was last year, September of last year, where in Lawrence, I believe, I mean, there was a video that went viral. There was a woman who was unconscious in the aisle of a store, right? And her 2-year-old child was upset, crying, freaking out that her mother was unconscious. And someone apparently had called 911, but someone else just stood there and recorded a video on their cell phone instead of even helping a distressed child. So I guess what I'm saying is I feel like we maybe, I don't mean to sound like a cynic here, but we might be relying a little too much on people's willingness to intervene. I mean, the whole bystander effect, it's out there, right?
Right. But this approach doesn't take anything away from the system as it currently is. What it does is it provides an opportunity to intervene if a bystander wants to. It provides them the ability to do something instead of just standing there.
Now, did folks ask you about other potential medical concerns? Because there could be any number of reasons why someone is unconscious or unresponsive. I mean, what if could they administer the naloxone and to someone who's, I don't know, passed out for an entirely different non-opioid related reason? Would it harm that person?
So this decision isn't going to be made by the bystander. You're talking to a highly trained, highly skilled emergency medical services dispatcher who is going to work with the caller after an ambulance has already been dispatched to make that determination as to whether naloxone may or may not be indicated. And if it is, they're going to provide instructions on where to get the medicine and how to use it. So one of the things that we heard is, how am I supposed to decide whether the person needs naloxone or not? That's not a decision for you. There are people who are trained and skilled in making those determinations, and they're going to be doing so.
So just this week, NPR actually had a very interesting story about the fentanyl crisis within the opioid epidemic. You know, it's, what, 50 times stronger than other opioids? And the story that NPR had was law enforcement officials, police officers who were, you know, at scenes helping people And I just clearly remember it. There was one officer in Connecticut who said he had just opened and closed
right,
the drawer of a bedside table. And a puff of, I don't know what, came out of that cabinet. And the fentanyl in it was so strong that he had an immediate reaction.
Right.
So I'm just saying that as context for wondering, are people at risk if they want to help someone who they find unconscious? And you can't know if they, you know, if they overdosed on some fentanyl-laced opioid.
So there theoretically could be if they do have a lot of substance on them. But generally speaking, in order for someone to overdose from just being in contact with the substance, there has to be a large quantity of substance on them to begin with. And that is almost never the case in these types of situations where someone is overdosing. Law enforcement comes in contact with large quantities of these substances when they are arresting dealers and such. But for your average street user, it's very uncommon.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions from a moral or even political perspective, right? Because in the New York Times, Gary Mello is quoted, in his own way, he basically cited this concept of moral hazard, right? I mean, he said, if folks feel like they'll be saved by naloxone or Narcan, they'll just keep doing it. If you're going to solve this problem, you have to make the drugs harder to get.
Right. So that's actually a very common belief, but unfortunately or fortunately, it's just not true. Providing reversal agents doesn't make people use more. It doesn't provide a safety net. Opioid users hate naloxone. It takes away their high. They don't want this drug, but it has the potential to save lives. And there's a lot of public health effort to get these into the hands of users and into the lay public. We're just providing another vehicle for which to do so.
Mm. I mean, is the idea of these lockboxes another way of just acknowledging that the opioid epidemic is so bad that right now one of the priorities for cities, towns, officials, the medical community is simply the extreme priority, which is saving lives?
Right. We've seen a fourfold increase in the number of opioid-related deaths since 2000. This is a problem that is getting worse, and we need to find out how it's happening, why it's happening, and how we can make it better. But while we're doing that, people are dying. This is an opportunity to decrease death and provide those people an opportunity to get well.
Mm. So what are the next steps? I mean, you've done this experiment. Are lockboxes actually going to be going out in Cambridge, and where would they be?
So our next step, of course, is to figure out whether this is actually plausible to deploy within a city. We've partnered with Cambridge. I think Cambridge was a great testing ground for this. The box itself is still under development, so I think that there's still many steps to go before this is actually deployed. But I think that myself and the rest of the researchers that I worked with were overwhelmingly impressed with the reception from the public.
Hmm. Suddenly it occurred to me, what about folks who say, I'm more likely to go into anaphylactic shock from a food allergy or some sort of, you know, incredible allergy, and I need an EpiPen?
Right.
But I can't afford it because the price of EpiPens has gone up so high. Why not have EpiPens out there in lockboxes?
Absolutely. Why not? And that's actually something that we're looking at. So in an ideal world, I see a situation where there's public access emergency medical supplies with tourniquets for bleeding, with EpiPens for anaphylactic shock, with naloxone for opioids. This is a disease process with a potentially time-sensitive intervention that can save lives, just like AEDs, just like EpiPens for anaphylaxis, just like tourniquets for bleeding. So once we get rid of the stigma, this can fall into that same group with all of those other life-saving, time-sensitive emergency responses.
You're an emergency room physician.
I am, yes.
How often do you encounter someone coming into your emergency department with an opioid overdose?
There's almost never a shift that goes by that I don't see a patient coming in suffering from an opioid overdose.
And what happens?
Most of the time, they get better. In my line of work, in the emergency department, it's the ones that don't make it to us that I'm worried about.
Well, Dr. Scott Goldberg is Director of Emergency Medical Services at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Dr. Goldberg, thank you so much.
Thanks.